trying to get you through. Here's the basic thing. When you get through second, but it comes, and regardless of how righteous some are, they can't stop the judgment of God because certain things are laid out. Like if Noah lived there, if Daniel lived there, or if Job lived there, they could only deliver themselves. You ever read that? So that means that they're in horrible condition, doesn't it? In chapter 16, it's during the 17th year of Pekah, and this is the son of Remaliah, during his reign over Israel, Ahaz, who is the son of Jotham, became king over Judah. You understand what you're reading is, although it's called Kings, it's actually a history and a documentation of the kings and what they did, right or wrong. And then the same way with Chronicles. And First and Second Chronicles calls it Chronicles, don't they? And this is called the Book of Kings. But this is what this is about. It's just telling us about these various kings, giving us highlights of their reign. It tells us that he was 20 years old when he began to reign over Judah, and he reigned 16 years. So he didn't live to be very old, did he? And when it says he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem, that's just simply stating that that's where the palace was, you understand. Samaria was the one in Israel, and then Jerusalem was the Washington, D.C. of their day, okay? You can relate to that, can't you? It says, Ahaz did not do what was right in the sight of the Lord. He did not follow the example of his ancestor David, but he followed the ways of the kings of Israel. In other words, he followed the practices of the heathen. And he remembered this is whom the Lord cast out these seven nations. Remember that? He told Israel, he said, I'm casting out these nations before you. Why? Because of their abominable practices. What were their practices? The idol worship and all the things that surrounded the idol worship. What's taking place? He told them, he said, don't, he told the Israelites, I'm talking about when they first came out of Egypt and all, don't study the ways of these nations. In other words, if I understand it correctly, he's telling us not to study other religions, which is interesting because even our Bible schools teach other religions and comparative religions and get in and get you totally confused. No, we're not to teach other religions, we're to teach Jesus Christ is the Son of God. We're to teach God is the Creator. And if we'll stick with that, then our chances of straying off on some of these tangents are far less, you understand. But the kings of Israel followed the practices of the heathen whom God had driven out of the land. And this Ahaz even made his son to pass through the fire. Now, in researching this, the best I can tell, this is dealing with, it's in worship to Molech, which was a god, a false god, obviously. And it appears that they went through, and I don't know what the method was. There's different thoughts on this. Some of them think they went through the flaming hot arms of this idol or whatever, passed through that as a dedication ceremony, or whether it's walking over the coals or running through the fire or whatever. This is disgusting to God. And that's really what, when he talks about abominable things or abomination, it means that it's disgusting practices to God. And you know, I saw a special here a few months ago that this is a thing that Americans are getting into now, walking over coals, hot coals. And you just open yourself wide up to demonic activity when you start doing those type things. When you start following into those practices, you get intrigued by that power, these supernatural things, then you open yourself wide open to the devil. Just stay away from that garbage. I don't care if they walk on there and they never get burned. It's not God. I promise you it's not God. God does not operate that way. Well, Ahaz has made his son pass through the fire, and according to the writings that I've read on this, that many of them would die during the process. The children would be burned to the point they would die. He burned sacrifices and incense in the high places, on hills, under every green tree. In other words, this man was heavy into idol worship. And it says, Rezin, king of Syria, and Pekah, king of Israel, warred against Jerusalem and besieged the city, but they were unable to defeat Ahaz. Do you think that that was because of Ahaz's goodness? Obviously not. But God's still remembering David, isn't he? And when Rezin, the king of Syria, came against Jerusalem, he said he captured the city of Elath and drove the men of Judah from there. In other words, he's taken some territory from Judah, from Ahaz's control. Although he didn't get the city of Jerusalem, the capital city, he's still gaining some control. They're losing territory. And it says he drove the men from there, and the Edomites inhabited Elath and dwelt there at the time this 2 Kings was written. Then Ahaz at this time sent messengers to Tiglath-Pileser, the king of Assyria, asking for military assistance. And he took the silver and gold in the house of the Lord and in the king's treasury and sent it to the king of Assyria. It's amusing how many times this happens. They go in and just strip the house of God, taking the gold, the silver, the treasures from the temple. Is what, when it says house of God, it's talking about the temple. And they're using this to try to buy all kings. Isn't it interesting they're not seeking God? Rather than going to the temple to seek God, they're going to the temple to get what they can get out of the temple to buy off a king or to purchase a king, whatever the case may be. Well, the king of Assyria responded to Ahaz's request, and he went to Damascus, and he fought against the Syrians. That was the capital city of the Syrians, and defeated them. And he killed Rezin, he captured the people, and he took them to Kir. And when Ahaz came to Damascus to meet Tiglath-Pileser, he saw an altar. And he sent the design and the pattern of this altar to Urijah the priest. Isn't it interesting? When I look at this, I think how we are. We're not content with God's design. Who designed the altar in the first place? God did, didn't He? Even in the temple of Solomon, God gave David the blueprint for that, didn't He? So then it's the design of God. Isn't it interesting how often we don't like the way God designs things? We see a pattern that we like better, and we just decide that we'll go with that pattern because it's more appealing. Well, that's what the church of the world has done today, all over the world. The church is going at what appeals rather than God's pattern, and that's why we're in the shape we're in. That's why the nation is in the shape it's in. It's not because of the sinners. It's because of the professing Christians. And if we will ever get back to God's pattern and start doing things God's way, then we'll see the power of God working in our behalf. But we're not going to do it following the patterns of the world or the patterns of religion. And you understand that's what this is about. That altar is a religious symbol, you understand. And this is what I see today. The United States of America is so religious it stinks. And God deliver us from religion. You understand that is a demon. That is demonic. And yet it has such an appeal because it looks good. Now, this is a paradox, and I shouldn't even say this, but it's like it's a good demon. There's no such thing as a good demon, by the way. But it has such an appeal to it, because so often it'll at least emphasize good morals. Not always, but sometimes. Okay. So he sees this altar, and he sends the pattern back to Urijah the priest. Now, if this man would have been a true man of God, he wouldn't have gone along with this, would he? Of course, he'd probably been killed, but hey, some things are worth dying for, aren't they? So Urijah the priest built the altar according to the pattern that Ahaz had sent to him. And when Ahaz returned from Damascus, the altar was already completed. So on this new altar, Ahaz offered his burnt offering, his grain offering, his drink offering, and he sprinkled the blood of his peace offering on this altar. Then he had the bronze altar. He had it moved from its place in front of the temple and placed it on the north side of the new altar. Now this amuses me. I want you to follow this. He didn't discard that altar. He just took it out of its main place. You understand, when you look at the layout, it was in the form of a cross. From the brazen altar to the laver, to the altar of incense, and to the Ark of the Covenant, and then winged on either side was the lampstand and the showbread. So he takes this brazen altar out. At the foot of the cross, he removes that. And that's what we're doing today. Wanting the blood out of the song books, don't want to talk about the cross and all these other things. Just tell me how rich I can get and how blessed I'll be, and I'll be happy. Well, if you want to be blessed, you want to be rich, you're going to go through the cross to get it. And I'm not talking about the cross just being an avenue to get what you want. You're going to find that wealth is more than money. There's a lot more to all this than we've realized. I think we've been hoodwinked to some degree. But he offers his burnt offering, this morning burnt offering and the evening offering, the burnt sacrifice and grain offering, the burnt offering, grain offering, drink offering to the people. He did all this on the new altar. But the bronze altar, he used that to inquire of the Lord. Well, look, if that altar was good enough to inquire of the Lord, it'd be good enough to offer all the other offerings on. And if that new altar is good enough to offer all the other offerings on, won't you inquire of the Lord on that one? I'm about like old Elijah and Elisha. Hey, go seek your own God. Elisha says, you know, if it wasn't for Jehoshaphat being here, I wouldn't even have anything to do with you guys. Go call out to your gods. What did Elijah tell the prophets of Baal, you know? Cry louder. He may not be hearing you. Interesting, isn't it? He didn't do away with it. But he wants to do it his way and then use God when he needs him. Does that sound familiar? Well, God's not a spare tire you carry around in your trunk. He's just been merciful to us through the years, hasn't he? Well, you ride to the priest, did. As King Ahaz commanded him, he did what he asked. Then Ahaz had the panels cut from the cart Solomon built. Do you remember this? I mean, man, Solomon, the glory of this temple was indescribable with all this and the lavers and all that he had set in the cart. He removed the lavers from there. He removed the oxen from underneath the sea of bronze and just set it on a pavement of stones. Something, isn't it? And to me, I can just see this as the church today. That's what we're doing. We're taking all this and making it what we wanted rather than what God wanted it. It says he also removed the intermission covered porch that had been built for the temple and the king's outside entrance. Now, I can't explain all this, and nobody else could that I studied. It just seems to be a place that they waited. And I'm just using Hebrew words here, just translated into English. I went back in, and that's why it says intermission covered porch. You ever heard of one of them? It's a covered porch. It appears to me like it was outside, and rather than staying out in the weather, that this was a place that you until you went in or you came out and you got to where you were going. I don't know if it was a vestibule or whatever, just a covered porch, and it was not a permanent dwelling place. Okay? Maybe there's a better word than intermission. So if there is, tell me. We'll put it in there. Well, King Ahaz removed the items of value to persuade the king of Syria to help him against Rezin, the king of Syria, Assyria and Syria. Don't get those two mixed up, okay? And Pekah, the king of Israel. And then it tells us the rest of the acts of Ahaz are written in the book of Chronicles of the kings of Judah. He died and was buried with his ancestors in the city of David. And Hezekiah's son succeeded him as king of Judah. Now, this was during the 12th year of Ahaz's reign over Judah. It says Hoshea, the son of Elah, became king of Israel. He reigned 9 years in Samaria. Now, this is the last king Israel has, okay? You want to write that down. Of course, it's on your chart that you have. Although Hoshea did evil in the sight of the Lord, he was not as bad as the previous kings. Isn't that something? He wasn't as bad as they were, but he was still doing evil. Shalmaneser, the king of Assyria, came against him, and he became a vassal to him. In other words, he's just a puppet or a servant king. And the king of Israel paid tribute to the king of Assyria. And then Hoshea had this bright idea, and there was a little conspiracy going on. The king of Assyria discovered his conspiracy because Hoshea had sent messengers to So, who was the king of Egypt, and he had withheld his annual tribute that he was to be paying to the king of Assyria. So the king of Assyria bound him and put him in prison. And then he went throughout all the land of Israel. He set a siege against Samaria that lasted 3 years. Now, what was Samaria? Capital city of Israel. And it was during the 9th year of Hoshea's reign. In other words, when he captured him, no one else reigned. It was during the 9th year of his reign over Israel, the king of Syria captured Samaria, and he carried the people of Israel to Assyria. And you understand, he's taken them out of the land of Israel now. It says he placed them in Halah, by harbor, and this appears to be a river. I never could get enough confidence to put the river Harbor, and by the river Gozan, and in the cities of the Medes. So he's dispersed these Israelites that are no longer living in their own land. The nation of Israel sinned against God, and God had delivered them from Pharaoh's reign. He had taken them out of Egypt, but they feared other gods instead of the Lord God. They walked in their sinful ways, just like the nations that God had cast out of the land before them. And they did these things, or thought that they were secretly doing things against God that weren't right. Built for themselves high places in all their cities, from the watchtowers to the fortified cities. And to me, that's just saying that the whole land's just covered. Everywhere they just build something, you know, whether it's at the watchtower or whether it's at the walls of a fortified city or whatever. They're just putting up these high places to worship these other gods. They'd set up for themselves idols and Asherah on every high hill under every green tree. And if you look that up, Asherah, your King James Version calls it groves. Actually, Asherah is a Phoenician goddess, and there's an image that they made to Asherah. And their worship was to the Phoenician goddess, is what this was all about. They followed the ways of the heathen, the nations before them. They burned incense on all high places, provoked God to anger. And contrary to what he had told them all along, they still served and worshiped idols. So, through his prophets, we've already seen this, some of it, God repeatedly warned both Israel and Judah to turn from their evil ways, to obey the commandments and the statutes of the Lord that had been delivered to them by the prophets. They had the law of Moses. They just weren't following any of this. And the children of Israel refused to listen to the prophets of God. And I see the same thing going on today. I mean, you want to get laughed at, just say, you know, God said. And I understand that there's a lot of people saying God said when God hasn't spoken. But you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You understand? God's still speaking. There's still prophets today. And we'd do well to heed to the prophets. But they wouldn't listen to the prophets like their ancestors who didn't believe in the Lord their God. They also rebelled against God. Let me tell you something. Rebellion against God will always cost you an end. You may get by with it for a while. You may get by with it for years. But I'll guarantee you, it will eat your lunch at the end. It'll get you. That's why it's so vital that we not rebel against God. The children of Israel rejected the statutes, the covenant, the testimonies that were against them. They disregarded God's warning. You know, God never just passes judgment. He'll warn and He'll warn and He'll warn. He's so merciful. But they wouldn't heed to the warnings, and they became this adulterous nation like those around her. Now, what are we doing in the United States? We're letting people from every nation in the world come in here. That's fine and well. But leave ye gods where you came from. If you come into this land, worship the Lord God. But what are we doing? We're letting them come in, embracing their gods, and putting emphasis on their God. And now our United States postal system is going to make a stamp in honor of the Muslim religion. I'll tell you something about this nation. It's pathetic. The children of Israel departed from the commandments of God. They molded the two images of calves, made the Asherah, worshipped in the host of heaven, served Baal. In other words, what they're doing is putting their emphasis on the creation, not the Creator. You think about it, they worship the sun. Who made the sun? They worship the moon. Who made the moon? All the constellations. Who made them? And see, the same thing is still going on today. And this is going on in the United States. They caused their sons and their daughters to go pass through the fire. They practiced witchcraft, soothsaying, sold themselves to do evil in the sight of the Lord. And the Lord was angry with Israel because of her sins, and He removed them from His presence. You look at that. He removed them from His presence. Now, when I was writing this, I just sat there and I thought about that for a while. Where can I go from the presence of God? God had set apart that land for them, and He put His blessing on it, put His name on the temple. But you understand, because they wouldn't follow Him, He removed it and just turned away from them. Do you think the Assyrians could have taken them captive had God not turned His back? Couldn't have happened, could it? But why would God turn His back? Because they rejected Him. They did not want Him as their God. But consequently, He gave them what they wanted. And they ended up going into captivity because they lost their protection. Only the kingdom of Judah remained in the promised land. But even at that, Judah still did not keep the commandments of God. She was following the statutes which Israel had made. What were these? Adulterous things. So the Lord rejected all the descendants of Israel. He afflicted them, delivered them into the hand of plunderers until He had removed them from His presence. So we ought to learn something from all this. It says God tore Israel from the house of David and made Jeroboam the son of Nebat king over them. But what did they do? The first king is the one that built those calves, isn't he? Jeroboam led Israel away from the Lord at the very outset and caused them to commit a great sin. He got them into idol worship from the very beginning, and they never departed from it. They followed the sin of Jeroboam during the entire existence of Israel as a nation. And just as the prophets had warned, God removed Israel from her own land, and she was carried away to Assyria. It says the king of Assyria brought the people from Babylon and Cutha, Ava, Hamath, and Sepharvaim and placed them in Samaria. In other words, he brought foreigners in and put them in the land that God had given to Israel. They took possession of the city of Samaria and dwelt there. Now, this is interesting. At the beginning, it says those who dwelt in Samaria didn't fear the Lord, so He sent lions among them, killing some. Even though these are heathen people, God's still not tolerating this type of stuff, you understand? In other words, He still wants to be recognized as God. Well, somebody informed the king of Assyria what was going on and telling him that, look, these nations that you've removed from their land and placed in the land of Israel, they don't know the customs of the God of the land. So he sent one of the priests that he had taken from Israel back to the land to teach the inhabitants how to fear the Lord. Interesting, isn't it? And this priest dwelt in the city of Bethel, it says. So every nation continued to make its own gods and place them in the shrines and the high places that the Samaritans had made. Even though the priest went back and he's teaching them, you know, the fear of the Lord and how they're to worship God, they're still worshiping all these various idols. It says the men of Babylon made Succoth Benoth, the men of Cuth made Nergal, and the men of Hamath made Ashima. The Avites, the Nibhaz and Tarta, the Zephorhites burned their children to Adrammelech and Anamelech, the gods of Zephyrvaria. In all this teaching and all this, they just still worship their own gods. And this is an amazing thing. In the Western society, people have a hard time even comprehending this because they don't realize that it goes on every day. We represent 20% of the population of the world, in case you didn't know. Only 20%. And on a daily basis, this type of practice is still going on today. I've seen more idols than you can count. It's amazing how people, I mean, just all over the place, and how people bring stuff, food, and all this, the idols, the money they'll pay, the things they'll do, the torment they'll put themselves through to a God that absolutely does nothing to them because He can't. And I have been tempted to just go over there and get that old coconut out of that God's lap just to show them that I could do it. But I thought, that's not wisdom. You understand? I mean, it's amazing how people are blinded, isn't it? But we're just as blind. We're just not doing it to idols as carved figures or little men with fat bellies. Boo. In case you didn't know. Have no respect for it, so that's why I call it a little man with a fat belly. Okay? It's going on every day. That's why people need to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's why God's wanting His Word put in our hearts. He's wanting to stir us. He's wanting His principles in us. To where we go, not fighting other gods, not talking about other gods, but where we go with the true and living God and lay the message out, and that God is proven to be more powerful. And you don't have to cut yourself and torment yourself to get something from God. All you have to do is believe. Isn't that great? Aren't you glad you're not having to put flesh hooks in you and things through your cheeks and carry the baskets and walk through the red hot coals and all this type of garbage that ancestors teach you to do? And it gets you no results. These people, they worshiped their own idols, didn't they? Says they feared the Lord from every class of people. They appointed priests of the high places who sacrificed for them in the shrines of the high places. They feared every god. You know, they was afraid of every god. I remember years ago, pastor friend of mine, actually his name Jim Hogan. He and I were in Africa, and we were asked to come to this house, and. There was a member of the family sick, and they wanted us to pray for that family member. And the first thing we did was Brother Hogan's doing most of the talking, telling them about Jesus. And they wanted to incorporate Him with all their other gods. And he said, you know, no, it doesn't work that way. He's not to be incorporated with any other gods. You believe this God. And see, we're just as guilty. We want to do our thing and then try to incorporate God in the process. No, it doesn't work that way. He has to be first place in our life, doesn't He? Something when you think about it. It says they feared the Lord, yet they served their own gods, just as they'd previously done the land which they'd been taken captive. Look, if your God couldn't keep you in your own land, why do you think He can keep you in somebody else's? Sometimes we're slow learners, aren't we? And at the time this book was written, it said the inhabitants of Samaria were still practicing the customs of adultery. They persisted in their former practices. They didn't worship God. They didn't adhere to the decrees, the ordinances of God, or the laws or the commandments of the Lord that he gave to he says, Jacob's descendants. Who'd he give them to? He gave it to Moses, right? The Israelites. Well, it's about break time. I didn't get as far as I needed to go, so you better fasten your seatbelt on this second round. Go ahead and take, excuse me. All right.